Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And who was in a walk year. I wanted to draft Derwin James so badly. By the way, Derwin James for the Chargers, 26 tackles, 3 sacks, 2 fumbles, 6 passes defense. When it's run, you see him as a safety stand on the line of scrimmage, basically. He's that much of a beast. But, and people say, well, what would you want to do with the third round pick? And I thought, well, the defense that terrible, draft a All-American defensive player. I don't care what conference it was. If it was Pac-12, Big Ten, Conference USA, I don't care, SEC. There were all, and pick your position.
I mean, I agree with everything you're saying.
Pick an All-American defensive player. Why are you picking a guy in a walk year when you already have a guy in Seth Roberts who's signed to do those same plays? Gruden was so fascinated with offense, offense, offense. And so I think, like we saw against Cleveland, you're going to have to outscore teams. And as we've seen, the Raiders, who one of the first times ever got this ridiculous break, not once, but twice, a fumble, and then New York calling in saying, no, it's not a first down.
That was shocking, but that one, that call at least was more reasonable to me.
That to me, though, just shows that as much as the Raiders get snake bit, they do have 3 Lombardi trophies, and the Browns have existed much longer.
It's worse.
Have never been to the Super Bowl, and yes, it's much, much worse for them. All right, let's go to Jared, who is in Fremont. You're on 95.7 The Game.
How you doing, guys? Okay, so, you know, this calls for Kolsky more, because I definitely disagree with you as far as, you know, I'm the one saying that you're applauding the 49ers looking toward the future, but yet ripping Khalil Mack, like most media members, and I get it. Khalil Mack's an absolute monster. But, you know, I disagree with the quote-unquote soft schedule. Now, you can look at Denver at the end of the year and say, yeah, they're going to be 7-9, 8-8. But if you look between the numbers, they're 38-3 weeks 1-2 at home.
Okay, but stop for 1 second, Jared. Stop for a second.
Yeah.
Did you watch that game against Denver?
Yeah, the Raiders should have won.
Okay, so then how can you tell me Denver's not a soft spot on the schedule when the Raiders easily could have won that game?
Because at altitude and with the unusual heat, the Raiders clearly, if you watch that game, they clearly ran out of gas. I'm not going to excuse this for the Raiders. The Raiders clearly have depth issues, and I'm going to get to that if you guys don't cut me off, as far as their roster and okay, as far as the Khalil Mack trade. And I know, Tittle, you're going to disagree with me. I understand that the Mack trade hit a spot with you. I get it. But you guys, Tittle, you're a huge Raider fan. I respect you. I love listening to you. Kolsky, I love listening to you, too. You tell me, and Tittle hit on a little bit with the Gary Conley analogy and all that. You tell me, who are their best 5 assets? Derek Carr aside, if you're an opposing GM, you're John Lynch, you're whoever, you're Pace from Chicago, and you're looking at the Raiders, who the hell are the best 5 assets on that team? They have a bottom 5 roster. Bottom 5. There's no – Raider fans want to disguise it because they have an above-average quarterback. And I'm not a huge Derek guy, but he is above average, slightly. But whatever, we can split hairs on that. He's not a great quarterback. He's not terrible. They have their quote-unquote quarterback. So that's what masks all this, right? But if you take Derek away and say they had a below-average quarterback, we'd be looking at this team like we'd be just looking at draft picks, right? But because they hired Gruden, and he's making the money, fair enough, and because they have above-average quarterback, we have these unrealistic expectations for this team. Even with Khalil Mack, they have a bottom 10 roster. There's no doubt about that, right?
Yeah, I don't agree.
I don't know what your point is, though.
Hold on. I don't agree with that, Jared. I don't think they have a bottom 5 roster or would have had a bottom 10 roster.
Hold on.
On defense, they do. But on offense, are you telling me Marshawn Lynch is not an above-average running back right now?
I think he's an average running back.
Oh, well, then I don't think you've been watching very carefully. He's been one of the better guys in the league to this point. He's leading the league in yards after contact. He's breaking more tackles than anyone in football. They have an above-average running back. They have an above-average interior offensive line. They have above-average wide receivers and an above-average tight end.
They have an overpaid interior offensive line. They got handled by the Rams, who their guys are paying. I watch that whole game. I go to every game, man.
The Rams have the best interior defensive line in football. So, yes, and that was a challenge.
And the Raiders were leading at halftime.
Exactly.
So. They were leading at halftime. I understand that.
Let me just ask you this, because the one thing that I hate the most, and Gruden said it himself, is, hey, we lost with Khalil Mack. which is just the most stupid, defeatist thing ever. You have to build around your once-in-a-lifetime talent. I remember when Curry's rookie deal was done. There were a lot of people, and I remember going on the show Chronicle Live arguing for Curry, and the other three guys were against it. And I just said, not that I was just a genius, I thought he's the best player, let's build around him. And they go, oh, he's not that great. Don Nelson says he can't defend anybody. He's got bad ankles. They decided to give him $44 million and to build around him. If you just get rid of your best once-in-a-lifetime players because, oh, we suck with him or he makes too much money, well, let's save that money for all the lousy schmucks that are going to replace him. There's no way that deal works.
If you let me respond, I hear you on that. Mm-hmm. Curry thinks a good analogy, but not a great analogy, because Curry got 4 years, $44 million, but so did Drew Holiday, so did Jennings, and so did Ty Lawson. It wasn't like he was making the most money in the NBA at that time. He was making the going rate for a guy on his second contract, those other three-point guards included, if you remember.
Well, who cares how much money he makes?
Because it does matter when you're making the most money at that position.
Yeah, but who cares? But look what you get for it. You get wins. Isn't that what it's all about? Let me just ask you this. Who are you saving the money for?
They had 6 wins last year.
Who are you saving the money for?
You guys are acting like they're breaking up the Beatles.
Answer the question. Who? Let's say you save $50 million. Okay, who does that money go to? It goes to the Tahir Whiteheads and the Ray Armstrongs. The Markel Lees. Okay, it goes to kids and old schmucks that we've seen for 15 years here in Oakland.
Fair enough. No, I completely agree with that, dude. I understand. I'm a huge Raider fan, too. I've got 12 years season tickets. I love the Raiders, just like you said. I hear you. But listen to me on this. Here's my thing. We don't know who it's going to go to. We have to. Now, if Gruden does not draft well and he does the same thing that Reggie's been doing. Now, I put this Khalil Mack thing on Reggie more than anybody.
No. Jared, that's all Gruden. Reggie and Mark Davis loved him. They loved him. They told him he was going to be a Raider for life. This shows you that Gruden is making all the decisions. Jared, thanks for the call. But if he thinks that Reggie McKenzie is in charge, he's sorely mistaken.
It's obvious. Reggie McKenzie shows you how he does business. It's the way they did business the last 4 or 5 years leading up to this one. They've entirely changed the way they're doing things. It couldn't be more obvious that Gruden is the one driving this bus now.
You know, it's funny. Reggie was so proud to bring in Cordell Patterson, and what a great. And what was one of the first things? You know, you come in and you get rid of Marquette King, and that's fine. A punter making $2 million, but I remember thinking, really, you didn't want Patterson? He wasn't making that much. And Tom Brady said, "Thank you."
We'll figure out the way to make it work.
And it is a shame because with them moving, and I don't know what we did to deserve them moving again, but with them moving, you kind of thought, all right. You know, a meteor might hit the earth. Yellowstone might blow up, we've been told. So as long as the Raiders are at the Coliseum, we'll go check them out. And I went to that Gruden press conference. In fact, I asked him and Reggie, who's in charge of personnel? He said both of us. We find out that's not the story. But I thought, hey, you know what? Maybe we'll get a little Chucky magic when the Khalil Mack thing went down. And I hated the draft. I was at Raider headquarters. I said it on the air. I hate this draft. The Raiders are dumb. And then... They don't care what I think, by the way, and I'm not in charge, thank goodness. But I've never in my life, and I've been a Raider fan my whole life, I've never experienced a more sour season. And I remember as a senior in high school, the year they were leaving, and they went 7-9, which felt like 1-15. I thought that this is the most sour of all Raider seasons because of this Khalil Mack trade and this hair. And they should be 0-4 right now, Matt.
And beyond that, Gruden is just stupefying with a microphone. He won't let the Mac thing die.
Look how good he is.
And he's also right. And he's also taking every opportunity to take shots at Reggie, which is just, I don't know, man. I thought Gruden was going to win all the press conferences and struggle on the field. And frankly, I think he's done okay on the field. From a scheme perspective, the offense looks fine to me. It's in front of a microphone where he keeps kicking himself in the soft parts. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me.
I love the fact that he's embraced the boiler, too. You know, welcome to my world.
Yeah.
David in Concord, you're on 95.7 again.
How's it going, man?
What's up?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, David.
Okay, I just wanted to touch on the money for Khalil Mack. I don't think there was that much left available. I think that was the Reggie McKenzie thing. He didn't proportion the cap well enough to keep Mac.
That's incorrect.
I think if they,
that's actually incorrect, David.
These are hard numbers.
They're that's incorrect. Let's go to Drew out in Millbrae. Drew, you're on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, thanks for taking the call, Rick. You know, I wanted to talk a little bit about Carr. I know it hasn't been his best season, like 2016 so far. You know, the Rams game was, I think, more of an anomaly. You know, the three picks. I think the Rams with Talib and Peters, when they're healthy, you know, along with that D-line, are going to make a lot of quarterbacks look bad. But, you know, other than the Rams game, you know, and the one pick late in the game against Miami, I mean, I think he's played pretty solid. People were saying he played okay last week. I beg to differ. 450 yards. You got Myles Garrett breathing down your neck with that D-line that they've got. I thought he played pretty darn well. I mean, the fourth quarter and the comeback, it reminded me of the old Raiders in the 70s. You know, I mean, you name the game, the CAA. I mean, it was incredible, the comeback. He got him moving down the field. And one thing I'm really upset about is that Garoppolo got hurt, because I would have loved to see them go head-to-head. You know, all the love Garoppolo got, you know, the last year. And what did he prove? Has he ever been to an MVP level like Carr was in 16? I mean, to even put him in the same breath with Carr, I think is disrespectful. What Carr did his first 4 years, getting to 100 touchdowns quicker than, you know, there was only four or five other quarterbacks that got to 100 touchdowns quicker than Carr did. So I just don't think he gets the respect he deserves, and I think he's going to have a huge year. He's early in with Gruden, and I think it's just going to get better from here on out, and I'd like to get your guys' thoughts.
All right, I'll take it first, Drew. Thanks for the call. Listen, Derek Carr will put up some great numbers. There's no doubt. That 2016 season was magical until the broken leg. He had plenty of fourth quarter comebacks. Last year was not good, didn't deserve to go to Pro Bowl, went anyway. This year, he has 7 interceptions, and I can think of about 5 that were horrifically dumb, underthrown or thrown into coverage. Right now, Derek Carr, to me, is playing at a very average level, above average at times. But it's the kind of thing we were talking about with Steve DeBerg. He'd throw 400 yards, and then he'd throw an interception in the end zone, and then they would lose. The bottom line is winning. Now, if you look around the league, I want Derek Carr. I'm glad he's signed for another 3 years after this. I think he's a great talent. But he's still in his 5th year. It gets bit in the butt by not just interceptions, but back-breaking interceptions.
Yeah, and it's what I was going to say, it's the critical mistake. Overall, most of what the caller said is right. Derek Carr can do a lot of things. He's going to put up numbers. He makes some huge plays. He's made a throw in each of, since the Rams game, in each of the 3 games, he's thrown a laser touchdown pass that just, between defensive players, hitting receivers in tight spots with a cannon. And he's made some great deep throws, but too often, in particular this year, too often in the biggest moment, he makes a critical mistake. And that's the difference between an average NFL quarterback and a really good NFL quarterback.
Yeah, he has more interceptions than touchdowns, which right now is not acceptable. We'll take a quick break. Mark Medina will join us on the other side. We'll switch a little bit to some round ball here. Rick Tittle and Matt Kolsky, come on back on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
And welcome back, Rick Tittle alongside Matt Kolsky, taking you up until 9 o'clock with your calls. 888-957-9570, the text line 95795. Basketball preseason is underway, and we're joined by our good buddy Mark Medina, of course, from the Mercury News, the longtime Warriors beat writer. And Mark, let's just talk about KD in Seattle and putting on the Sean Kemp jersey. And, you know, they don't have basketball there anymore. And, you know, Warrior fans have nothing to be worried about. I just thought it was kind of a feel-good moment for those fans, and you know, really not much more than that, right?
Yeah, the atmosphere was amazing. I mean, it was only a preseason game, but it felt like a playoff game. I mean, the game, I think, had a sellout crowd around 17,000 fans. The Warriors said that when they announced that game in February, it sold out within 4 hours. And I don't want to say the comparisons were equal, but the atmosphere and the storylines and everything with that, with Kevin Durant and his connection with the Sonics, it really reminded me of when I was covering the Lakers for the last few years down in L.A. and seeing Kobe Bryant's farewell tour, where every time he was making his last appearance at a road venue, there are all these connections because who he is as a player, what he accomplished, the history against that particular opponent as a team or a player, and video tributes. And here in Seattle yesterday, you kind of had some of those elements where during lineup introductions, they're showing highlight reels of Kevin Durant's rookie season with the Sonics. There's so many fans that are kind of waxing nostalgia and wearing old KD Sonics jerseys. And then, as you mentioned, busted out the Sean Kemp jersey. And then most importantly, he put on a show. I mean, he got off to a little bit of a slow start, but then wound up with a typical Kevin Durant line of 26 points and a bunch of assists and rebounds.
So one of the things I kept hearing about from the announcers, seeing stuff on Twitter, people were saying there was a Super Sonics chant an hour before game time. Who talked about when Seattle gets basketball back, and what do you think the realistic timeline is on that, if there was any light shed?
Yeah, it's a valid question. I mean, poking around this week leading up to it, talking to people in the NBA, talking to Rick Welts, who, you know, the Warriors president, was basically the guy who put this exhibition together because, you know, he knows how to work with the league office. He has that connection as a former Sonics ball boy and public relations officials in the 1970s. I wouldn't brace for a Seattle team anytime soon. That's not because the NBA doesn't want a team there. They certainly do want a team there, but they're not pinning it as a priority to expand the league right now. Right now, they think that 30 teams is enough. I think there's a concern if they add another team, it would dilute some of the talent league-wide as a whole, and I think some people already think that's the case. And then there would also be other questions raised of, you know, for the sake of balance between the Western and Eastern Conference, would you have to then add another team for the Eastern Conference? So the only way that I sense that this could happen imminently is if a team relocates, but I don't sense that at all. I mean, the Sacramento Kings was the most recent example of a franchise that tried to relocate a few years ago to Anaheim. And, you know, I remember Chris Henson was trying to get them to Seattle in 2013, but they have since had a new arena. So, you know, to answer your question, nothing is coming, but whenever there is a point of, you know, relocation or expanding, Seattle will be the first team to have that choice.
And it looks like the NHL's going there in 2 years, so it'd probably be that either refurbished key or whatever they got going on there, you would think. Speaking with Mark Medina of the Mercury News, you know, it's funny, you were talking about KD putting on a show. I saw this alley-oop and just this thunderous one-hand tomahawk, and I thought, wow, great jam by Jordan Bell. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's Damian. It's Damian Jones. He's being aggressive. It made my heart sing because we always hear that he's so passive. I loved it.
Yeah, and to Damian Jones's credit, Durant's pass wasn't really that good. It was completely out of reach, and Damian Jones is telling me after the game that he thought it was good to flex out his shoulder mobility a little bit, and looked like it worked, right? Steve Kerr was saying that was the play of the game, and I think to your point, that play really captured his comfort level that's been increasing, you know, ever since he became the starting center in preseason, where he's being more aggressive. He's showing some of his moves. Now, he's not a finished product. He's still been struggling with staying out of foul trouble. He had 3 fouls yesterday, but I think that the plan moving forward is, A, it is subject to change. Steve Kerr wants to give Jordan Bell and Kayvon Looney different chances based on matchups and just opportunity because it is preseason. But I think there's a bigger priority while DeMarcus Cousins is still rehabbing his Achilles to give Damian Jones the bulk load of the minutes, not only because he's young and the Warriors want to see how he develops, but I think they also want clarity on Damian Jones because they have to make a decision by October 30th whether they're going to exercise his team option for next season or allow him to become an unrestricted free agent. And I think the more data and film that you have available, the more comfortable they will be with making that decision.
I know, Mark, you wrote about Kevon Looney and sort of his experience getting a lot of playing time down the stretch last year and what he's working on heading into this year. And he's the guy that I've had a crush on him as sort of the little scene Kevon Looney in his first year and a half, but especially watching him, even in a preseason game, he's such a basketball nerds type of player because he doesn't do flashy stuff. But he knows exactly where he's supposed to be. His position defensively, his verticality defensively, his ability to stay in front of smaller players. And then on offense, he's adding little bits at a time. I love this guy, and I feel like the Warriors' best lineup right now is with him at the five.
Yeah, if Steve Kerr, the Warriors coach, is listening to this, he's probably nodding his head in agreement at everything you said, because I remember just referencing this piece that you mentioned. He was gushing about all those little things and how dependable he is. And he recalled that last week during practice, he went up to him and said, "Hey, you may not be the flashiest guy and you're not glamorous, but you know, you're going to have a really productive and long career." And later on, you know, when I was asking Steve Kerr about Kevon Looney, he was saying that he's going to have a 10 or 12 year run in the league simply because he does all these little things. Now there's a lot of intrigue and question marks of, you know, can he develop an outside game? He's spending a lot of time this summer and in training camp working on his mid-range jumper, and I think he's shown some more comfort level in preseason. But is that going to be his main game? Most likely not. But even worst-case scenario where he's not hitting shots, he's still adding a lot of value. Now, as far as him being the best center option, I think in certain games that is the case. But I think under Steve Kerr's philosophy of wanting to adhere to matchups, there's still a value in going with a true center in Damian Jones, because even if, you know, those centers are a dying breed in the NBA in the age of small ball, there are some guys like Karl Anthony Towns, for example, Minnesota, you know, Joel Embiid in Philadelphia, where it would be valuable to go big versus big.
You know, it's funny, Mark. We were both in media day, and when Myers and Kerr went out there, and they were kind of saying that, you know, we're going to try to enjoy this season, almost like it might be the last year with the band together. And Steve Kerr said, you know, we're kind of playing with house money. And then Draymond Green gets up there, and he said, "I would never say we're playing with house money." And he's like,
"What a surprise. Draymond Green disagrees with someone, right?"
And then he said, "I didn't want that trophy. I want nothing to do with last year. It's all new. We got to stay hungry." So it was kind of a funny little juxtaposition there.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the juxtaposition is the house money comment. But I think that there is kind of an agreement with the idea of Steve Kerr, you know, focusing in on the moment and the journey ahead. And then I think that's what Draymond was also talking about. And I think the reason not only has to do with the uncertainty of if Kevin Durant's leaving after this season and all that, but I think it's also because as much as the Warriors had success last season, they won an NBA title, for heaven's sake, they knew that they had a lot of struggles last year with staying motivated, and you know they came close to losing in the playoffs, going seven games against the Rockets. And I think it was a fine line in that. In retrospect, Steve Kerr and a lot of people in the organization felt like they used that idea of being in the finals for so many years in a row, and the idea of burning out almost psychologically hurting them, where it made them feel that it's a chore going to the facility. It's a chore, you know, getting up for games. And I think that they didn't want to have that attitude. At the end of the day, it's a good thing that they've had long playoff runs. So I think they wanted to instill, you know, more of that joy in going to work. Now, with that being said, it's helpful that the Warriors have had a little bit of a summer to recharge and feel rejuvenated. I don't think they would be having this attitude if they would be continuing to play basketball ever since the finals ended. But it'll be an interesting thing to see if that'll actually affect their performance once the regular season starts.
So Patrick McCaw, do we have a sense of, is it just as simple as he wants more minutes? And if so, where does he think he's going to get him? I just don't totally understand. Even if a roster spot opens up in, say, Minnesota, does he think he's a starter there?
I don't know what Patrick McCall's thinking. To be honest, I don't think people in the Warriors know what he's thinking. I don't even know if his representation knows what he's thinking. And that's a bad thing. And as this saga's unfolded with Patrick McCall, it's made less and less sense why he hasn't re-signed with the Warriors. I think going in, it was totally understandable that you want to keep your options open. If there, heaven forbid, there is a offer that is too good to give up, or if you can at least get some offer that's not dramatic, but give it to the Warriors to see if they can give you a little bit of an increase, by all means, do what you need to do. But by the time mid-July hits, summer league hits, the market's dry and you're not getting any bites, it's time to re-sign with the Warriors. Like, use this upcoming season as your case to get a big free agent deal, because there's not going to be offers this summer. The Warriors have made it clear by their words and, more importantly, their actions that they want to play young players this year. They allowed Zaza Pachulia and JaVale McGee to go to other teams. David West retired. There's minutes to be had for all these younger guys. And more he holds out, I think he's burning a lot of capital with the Warriors. Now the Warriors have maintained downplaying the McCall absence, and as soon as he comes back, he'll be welcomed back with open arms. But just look at it practically speaking. He's missing training camp practices. He's missing exhibition games. And also look at how the Warriors have constructed practices, right, where because they have all these other young guys, they've really revamped their player development strategy, where they've had all these young guys come into practice 2 hours before the actual practice starts to try to accelerate their learning curve, get them caught up on terminology and plays and just getting their shots up. All those things are things that Patrick McCall's missing, and I think that that's frankly going to hurt him as far as trying to become a better player, which in turn would help satisfy his end game with getting a better deal. So it doesn't make sense what he's doing right now, even in the 1% scenario that maybe it's related to Jimmy Butler and Minnesota shopping him, and all of a sudden there's minutes to be had. I mean, Minnesota doesn't have the same kind of investment and familiarity that the Warriors have with Patrick McCall. And when you look at Tom Thibodeau, he's a guy that doesn't like to play young players. So even that whole hypothetical doesn't make sense at all either.
Very interesting. Just a couple more questions for Mark Medina, Warriors beat writer for the Merc. Jacob Evans getting some of those McCaw minutes, as we might think. And I know he had no points in 18 minutes. He missed a couple of field goals, missed a three, but got a board, got a couple of blocks, got a steal. And when you are a rookie on one of the greatest teams and one of the greatest offensive teams in the history of the NBA, fans should not expect him to roll in and go for 40. I mean,
right.
Are you looking for, is he kind of minding his P's and Q's? Is he being shy? Is he exerting himself, or is he just a rookie in his second preseason game?
That's a really good question, and I don't know how it's going to turn out with him, because I think it's like with a lot of things, it's always going to be somewhere in the middle, but I don't know to what degree. I mean, big picture, you know, the Warriors downplayed his summer league numbers, but at the same time, it was serious enough for the coaching staff to tell him, hey, you need to change your mechanics and your shot. And, you know, since summer league, during his offseason workouts and training camp, he's been shooting with more arc in his shot. They're not looking for him to score a bunch of points, but I think ideally they want him to at least be a shooting threat. And I think the most important thing, though, for Jacob Evans is that he defends well. He gives energy. He can give them minutes without screwing things up. And then, you know, just allow Steve Kerr some comfort level that, you know, maybe he can afford to rest some of his all-stars at certain times because of maybe minor ailments or just needing a quick breather, but I don't want to go strong enough and say it doesn't matter if he doesn't shoot well. It certainly matters, but it needs to be to the extent that he's a shooting threat as opposed to he needs to score X amount of points per game. And there's always a fine line with it.
All right, so let's just say for the sake of argument, Mark, that McCaw is not coming back. That means there's extra roster spots open. It's possible they won't fill them, but if I'm a Warrior fan and I'm watching the rest of preseason and thinking which of these guys I don't know that much about might fill that roster spot, what can you tell us to look for in terms of the guys, you know, whether it's Kendrick Nunn or whoever, that they're looking at to potentially take that spot?
Yeah, I mean, now the Warriors have been insisting to me, from those I've talked to ever since, you know, Patrick McCall formally declined the qualifying offer before it expired last Monday, that they're not looking at contingency plans yet. The priority still is to work things out with Patrick McCall. But at the same time, I'm going back to conversations I've had with Joe Lacob, the Warriors majority owner. They have contingency plans for everything under the sun for the next year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, and beyond. So with that said, if Patrick McCall doesn't decide to come back, I think the most likely scenario is they fill that with a training camp invitee, Kendrick Nunn, Marcus Derrickson, because they are wing players. I would be very surprised if the Warriors decide to leave the roster spot open, because right now they have 13 players on the regular season roster to begin with, and so the plan was to leave the 15th and final spot open to save a little bit of money, but I think most importantly, give themselves flexibility in case they can make some kind of trade before the trade deadline. So I don't think that they want to have this mind of keeping two roster spots open. That's a little bit dicey. And I think it also, they also have the back of their mind that, you know, remember the Western Conference Finals when they were missing Andre Iguodala because he was hurt and Patrick McCall because he was hurt. Nick Young is a little bit inconsistent to say the least. They didn't have a lot of wing players. So I think this past offseason, it was a real emphasis to trim on the center position by allowing Zaza and JaVale to go elsewhere and really load up on wing players. So I think that's going to be the emphasis moving forward.
So you're telling me I'm not going to get to watch Jamal Crawford this year?
I think you never say never. He was at the game in Seattle yesterday. Maybe he made some small talk with Bob Myers.
Come on.
I would be very surprised if Jamal Crawford signs with the Warriors. They know he's a great locker room guy. They know he can provide some secondary scoring punch, but even if he's been fighting father time, he's still an older player, and I think they wanted to add some more infusion of youth on their bench.
That's Mark Medina. Read him in the Mercury News. Follow him on Twitter at MarkG_Medina. We're in preseason, and you are in playoff form, Mark.
Well, you know what? I won't burn myself out. I'll keep it up throughout these next 9-10 months.
Just remember, 28 minutes a game for you, all right?
Yes, sir. Hey, right. If you needed me to do 40, I take care of myself in the off season, so I'll be able to handle my conditioning.
Great stuff. Thanks, Mark.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right. Mark Medina, always one of the guys closest to the heartbeat of the Warriors over there.
God, I'd just love to watch Jamal Crawford. More importantly, I'd love to talk to Jamal Crawford on the radio. Maybe I can still do that. You guys got Jamal Crawford's number back there? No? All right.
All right. You know what? I kind of think the whole McCaw thing, and I'm not going to read too much into a parade, but I remember I was walking in the parade, and yes, that was a very privileged thing. I loved it as a lifelong Warrior fan. But I remember looking up at McCaw on the bus, and he seemed a little distracted, a little aloof. Maybe it was because he didn't participate as much as he had before.
He's a weird guy, too. Well, I shouldn't say that. He does seem like a kind of timid guy in general, though, doesn't he?
Well, on the other hand, he's the guy who picked number zero because he said he had zero doubt that he'd be a star.
Maybe that's not the right word. He's
aloof?
Yeah. Well, aloof feels like it carries a more negative connotation than I might want to say, but he definitely is someone who was not outgoing, who didn't share
maybe
of himself.
A maverick?
Sure. a lone wolf, if you will.
Okay. But I think
this is all pretty speculative.
I kind of think, in a way, that if he was a guy that came into camp, you know, claimed off somebody's other Gatorade League roster, that they would have washed their hands of them. I think Joe Lacob, being he was the first guy that they bought, that first second round pick, that was it $3.5 million for him and $5 million for Jordan Bell?
Yep.
The first guy that they actually bought, I think that they have a little bit of an affinity for him, like he's kind of like a cousin instead of just an employee. And otherwise, I think, because I really think that the Warriors need Patrick McCaw, not like a hole in the head, but they need him.
Like a fish needs a bicycle?
They need him 1%, and he needs the Warriors 99%.
That part I agree with.
Yeah. And so
maybe 5%.
5%. Okay. And they like him.
Yes.
And the thing is, it's like, you know, Sally Field, they like you. They really like you.
And more than that, I think they believe, and I tend to agree, he's got a chance to be a contributing NBA rotation player.
Had he not slammed on his back at the Golden 1 Center, we don't know what would have happened with the guy. But I understand if you want to be like a, you know, you're Ian Clark. You get a ring, good luck, starting someplace else. Maybe he thinks I'm a star and I'm going to get Harrison Barnes money. You know, I don't know what he's thinking. But while you're thinking, if they give you an offer, why wouldn't you want to come back, get probably, knock on wood, don't jinx, another ring, and then beef up, as Mark was saying, beef up your CV. Look what I can do, NBA.
Yeah, I don't know, because it, specifically to that point, I don't think he's getting more than 15 minutes a game anywhere. And if that's what you're getting, there's no better place to maximize your value and make sure you look good than to play with the champs. Like, you're going to be on the court with two or three all-stars a lot of the time. I don't get it. I don't get it. And I like McCaw from a basketball standpoint. He mm-hmm. does do things. He's the guy that he already is what they're hoping Evans can be, right? Mm-hmm. A guy who can defend three or four positions, certainly one through three, handle the ball a little bit, knock down an open shot. You know, it's simple stuff. And if he could do that with the champions, much like Ian Clark, he could go make money elsewhere. So I'm completely with you. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't see the value in this play.
If you have something to say on this topic, we would love to hear from you. 888-957-9570. Once again, 888-957-9570. The text line 95795. Come on back. It's Tittle and Kolsky on 95.7 again.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Thank you for that, and welcome back to 95.7 The Game. Live and local, Rick Tittle and Matt Kolsky talking sports with you. And you can participate in the discourse. Just call us up toll-free, 888-957-9570. Shoot us a text, 95795. Getting back to a little football here, our local teams will be in action tomorrow. The Arizona Cardinals will visit the 49ers in Santa Clara, and the Raiders will be heading down to Carson, California, to take on the Los Angeles Chargers.
Virtual home game for the Raiders.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's see if they still find a way to bugger it.
I'm not saying they won't. I'm just saying that's going to be a Raider crowd by far.
Well, and that's why when you think about this, it's one thing for, you know, and I could do a whole show about Mark Davis moving the team. It's one thing for what happened there, and they tried to get L.A., and now they're going to be the Kings of Vegas with their practically their free stadium. For what went down with the Spanos family in San Diego is just criminal.
It really is.
Now, I went to Jack Murphy a couple months ago. I saw Tottenham play there in a preseason game. It's still, you know, it's like Candlestick. You know, it's old, but it'll do the trick 8 times a year. But to be second banana in a town that hates you, it's one thing for Donald Sterling to leave to be second banana to the Lakers. But you have that community. And San Diego, as much as it pains me as a Raider fan, is a great town. It's a beautiful town.
Certainly a good place to see a football game.
It's and you had that whole town. They wanted you to stay. And then to say, well, I need the public. Any person who says, I need the votes, they already know the outcome. You're not going to get the money in California. You're just not. And so this is what you wanted. You wanted to go play in a soccer stadium for a few years where you're going to draw more fans for the opposing team and then move in and pay rent on a beautiful stadium. I remember, and I'm name dropping here, but I had Ice Cube on my show a couple times when he was doing the Big Three promo. And I just said, will anybody in L.A. care about the Chargers? And he said three words. Oh, hell no. Now we know he's a Raider fan.
I can hear that from Ice Cube ringing in my head now, which is nice.
So beyond that, though, Philip Rivers is a, I mean, it's funny. You don't think of him as a Hall of Famer, but his numbers are Hall of Fame numbers.
Yeah, he probably is.
Outside of no championships. And But let's get back to Beathard, because C.J. Beathard is the Niners quarterback. And of the Niners banged up offensive line, as we were talking about, they have a couple of youngsters in there. Kyle Shanahan said, quote, he played in a number of games last year where the offensive line was pretty beat up. I think he's gotten better knowing where people are, faster with it. That happens the more you play in a system. So he's further ahead this year than he was last year.
Good.
That's
good news.
Those are all good things, but I kind of like the fact that, hey, he's used to getting beat up, so we're going to be all right. Kind of.
It's a tough spot.
Yeah.
It's... Boy, it was a tough spot for Jimmy Garoppolo, who we have a lot more faith in behind a line that started to take some of those dings in week one, right? And I watched, I think it was a Baldy breakdown, but I watched somebody's film room Niners thing during the week and a spotlight on the snaps Gary Gilliam played, and it was bad.
Brother, I mean, when did Brian Baldinger start doing that?
I don't know, but it's great.
I never knew he was so crazy.
Yes, he's crazy.
He always seems so straight-laced when I talk
right.
to him.
No, that's true. He makes a very even-keeled radio guest, but a surprisingly energetic tweeter. I love those tweets, though. He teaches me about football. That's the thing for me about football. I love people who can actually educate me somewhat, because I didn't grow up playing the game, so some of the little intricacies have gotten by me for most of my life. All that being said, Gary Gilliam, I am not an expert on line play. I watched him twirl in a circle while Melvin Ingram ran around him last week. And Ingram's good, but that is a bad sign.
The pirouette is probably not in the bag of tricks.
Not what you want.
You know, I wanted to ask you this too, Matt, because the injury that happened to Garoppolo, running out of bounds and at the last second leaning in to meet that DB, and then, of course, because of the angle, his left knee buckled under the pressure. I'm okay with it. You know, I don't think that they'd say, oh, well, listen, you can't do that. It's not like he was diving headfirst into a pile. There's a certain thing about playing football where I don't care what position you are. You know, you have to convince yourself that you're the baddest mofo on the field.
Yeah.
If you doubt that, you're dead. And so when you're about to hit someone and here's this little DB coming up, oh, you want to hit me? All right, here's a little lick back. I had no problem with that, even as a quarterback. It was such a fluke that his knee was going to buckle like that. That's very rare to see a guy to have that happen. So what I'm trying to say is that I don't blame Garoppolo, because to me that wasn't pure stupidity. Like, what are you doing? Just run out of bounds. There's a guy right there, and there's also a little thing like, well, if I don't hit him, this is going to hurt a lot more too.
Yeah, I hear all that. But I would be 100% with you if it had happened any other location on the field. But on the sideline, how many times do we see quarterbacks with an opportunity there who just step right out of bounds? It's so overwhelmingly the smart play.
I think you hear the jungle drums, the red mist descends.
I get it.
Man, you know, man against man, here we go.
And you want your quarterback to be the sort of guy who wants that.
Lead from the front.
You want your quarterback to be the guy who thinks about doing what Garoppolo did right up until the last possible moment and then decides, man, I want to do that, but no, I got to step out of bounds because I matter too much to the team.
There have been times when the quarterback's running the ball and then here comes a linebacker, and then you can see just slide, just slide, just slide, and they initiate contact. Then I think, no, you dummy, now you got a concussion. This to me was a little more forgivable. It's just because that's not the type of thing where you usually rip your knee apart.
All right. No, that's the thing, is like to get to tear your knee in that scenario is just horribly unlucky.
Do you think because of that's a fluke, or Garoppolo now goes into tin man status? Because remember, he was the guy until he got hurt after two starts. Then they had to put in Jacoby Brissett, as you remember, in New England.
Yeah. It's so hard to say.
Is he in the tin man category?
I hate that in football because everyone's the tin man, right? You're just one bad hit no matter who you are.
No doubt.
But you can't help think about it. How do you not think about it? Mm-hmm. It's small sample size theater. That's the thing about football in general. We have so many or so few samples of anything that it's hard in the NFL, with the exception of quarterbacks who have incredibly long productive careers, like a Tom Brady. It's so hard for anyone in the NFL to establish anything with like statistical consistency that, I mean, he's had three stretches of playing. Two of them have ended in injury, but I don't know. That's not enough. Is he a tin? I don't know. He could be a tin man. He also might not be. He just might be unlucky twice.
By the way, how's this for a promo for another show? On Friday, I was in the car during the Caboose Pistol.
Hey now.
For Papa and Bonte.
Don't miss it, noon to three.
And our good friend Derek Papa, the whole Caboose Pistol was him talking about his stool sample. So if you want the ultimate.
Oh, no.
If you want the ultimate Caboose Pistol, go back to wherever. What do we have them on? Radio.com.
It's a little too on the nose, isn't it?
On our website. Yes.
I didn't think that was what Caboose Pistol meant.
That is why Marconi toiled in his lab.
Because Caboose with the. Never mind.
Yes. All right. I think that was a Lund thing.
Young Hot Nick. Young Hot Nick.
Oh, goodness gracious.
What, we got little herbs in there?
That, I think that was just a series of things that Wes never wants to hear on the air again.
You mean Wes, the dirty white boy?
Dirty white boy.
You can get Wes to do the Usain Bolt dance anytime.
Well, was that the dab or was that Usain Bolt?
No, it's Usain Bolt.
Oh, it was Usain Bolt. Yep. Okay, gotcha. Yep. Another quote here about the injuries from the head coach of the 49ers, Coach Shanahan. Quote, some years you have lucky years. My last year in Atlanta, I don't think we had one guy hurt on offense the whole year. It doesn't always pan out that way. You hope to weather the storm and get through it and win some close games, and you hope you get healthier as it goes, just like we did last year. So is it really just lady luck when it comes to these type of things?
Well, it's lady luck that Joe Staley got hurt and Jimmy Garoppolo tore his knee up, but it's lady roster construction that you don't have anybody who's any good behind those guys.
She's the dowager princess. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, he's right, but also the reason the Niners seem to fall apart so quickly with injuries is that this is one of the least deep rosters in the league. So yeah, injuries are luck. The thing that's not luck is injuries are particularly damaging to a team that doesn't have depth.
One of the, and maybe it's true, but I think it's a very, very poor excuse, and we hear it a lot. We hear it with the A's, with the Tommy John, we hear it with the Niners. Fire the training staff. Like, they're doing something so out of the ordinary. The other night, Tom Brady basically put on a infomercial for TB12. For what he does at 41 years of age. That's actually what he did. But
which, by the way, has nothing to do with the team's training staff whatsoever, apparently.
No. Right. So, but whenever there are, you know, people say, why is it that the A's have more Tommy Johns? I'm like, they don't. Why are the Niners getting hurt? The training. It's like the training staff didn't get them properly prepared. It's like all offseason, just eat donuts. What are you doing running around? Get back in that hammock. They didn't do that.
Or like there are like wildly differing methods of training around the NFL. Mm. Like the Niners are engaged in highly controversial training. If only they would adopt the Seahawks method, everybody would be fine. It's literally a sport where guys launch themselves around like missiles at each other. People get hurt. It's weird. At least the A's thing, although I'm with you, it's maybe they have two extra Tommy Johns and it's bad luck. At least I understand where people are coming from, because they hear the same thing over and over again and they're not following the rest of the league, and it's not obvious that this would be happening to everybody. So it's like, wow, they keep having the same injury. I wonder if there's something there. With the NFL, everyone's hurt all the time. That's it.
The way that things have changed and training methods. To me, the biggest thing was when I was playing D2, we would spend a half hour before every practice stretching, which was mind-numbingly boring.
Sure.
Literally a half hour stretching. But it worked. And they said, it's funny, they said, we used to think you would like lean over and stretch your hammy, bounce, bounce, bounce. Now we realize that's horrifying.
Yeah.
Go down and just hold it and let it stretch. And it's funny because I remember seeing this film of the Niners. I remember Gene Washington, the great wide receiver, was bouncing. Bounce, bounce, bounce. Yeah. It's like, let's make it. And in the 80s when I was playing, the new thing was carbs. So we had to have pasta for for breakfast. Oh, had to have lasagna for breakfast.
Doesn't cereal have just as many carbs as pasta?
They introduced this new thing called the water break. But since that time, the two, and there are a lot of things that I go to camp now and I laugh. The two things that make me laugh the most are the guy running with the parachute like the drag racer. The other thing, and I'll never, ever understand this, and I'm against it. And the inventor can come on and tell me why it works. I'm against it. I saw the Raiders at camp playing with a round ball.
What?
They would bounce the ball in the middle, kind of like, you know, rugby or Aussie rules, whatever. And then they would scramble after it. I said, you're playing with the most unpredictable pointy ball ever.
Why would you practice with that?
Why would you practice with a round ball where you can predict the bounce?
That doesn't make any sense.
That's like the stand-up.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.